Welcome to The Authority File, the academic library podcast from Choice. Choice is a publishing division of the ACRL and the publisher of Choice Reviews and CC Advisor. This episode is brought to you by Human Relations Area Files, or HRAF. I'm Bill Mickey, the host of the podcast and the editorial director at Choice, and for this four-episode series, my guest and I discuss the origin of the Human Relations Area Files as an independent cross-cultural research agency based at Yale and as a publisher of the uniquely developed eHRAF World Cultures and Archaeology databases. We'll also describe some of the new research our guests are currently developing in their respective fields. So, for the next four episodes, I'll be joined by Dr. Carol Ember, president of HRAF and lead investigator on a five-year NSF-supported interdisciplinary research project to study how natural hazards may have transformed cultures. Also joining us is Dr. Peter Peregrin, HRAF's chairman of the board and Lawrence University professor of anthropology. In this first episode, our guests and I start off with a discussion of HRAF's origin story and its evolution from a vast collection of paper files to its current e-resource format. Okay, so let's begin with a discussion of the origins of HRAF. Dr. Ember, can you provide us with a brief overview? How and why did it launch, and what was its mission when it first started?
So actually, the origins of HRAF go quite a way back to 1929, when there was an Institute of Human Relations was started up at Yale, and that institute was explicitly designed to develop an integrated science of human behavior. And what was innovative about it, it brought together scholars from medicine, law, nursing, biological and social sciences, and the social sciences included psychology, sociology, economics, and anthropology. And the point of bringing these people together was to do research together and collaborate. And in 1935, George Peter Murdoch, who was, we consider HRAF's intellectual founder, actually persuaded the group to begin what they call then the cross-cultural survey, which is HRAF's precursor. And the plan was to put together a database of information about the cultures of the world so that scholars from any discipline who are interested in humans could look at human behavior, as they put it, in all its variety, not just those closest to home. And now they managed to get grants from the Carnegie Corporation and the Social Science Research Council to hold a conference in New Haven in the late 1940s with the aim of setting up a separate organization, a membership organization, to carry on and distribute the database of information about the cultures of the world. The Human Relations Area Files became the name of the new corporation. Notice two pieces of the name came from the Institute of Human Relations, which is why we start with human relations. Right. And Human Relations Area Files was born officially in 1949. It became financially separate from Yale at that time, but we remain affiliated with Yale, and Yale is one of our sponsoring members. What's interesting to me is that, to my knowledge, HRAF is the only survival from that Institute of Human Relations, which I'm not sure when it disbanded, but it disbanded around the same time many interdisciplinary institutes disbanded. There was another one at Harvard, and they all sort of disappeared at the same time with increased specialization. But that's how we got started. It has a long history.
Okay. So it sounds like, that cross-disciplinary approach that Mr. Murdoch had sort of encouraged and seems like he was very successful in accomplishing what was sort of the context around research being done at the time? I mean, for him to sort of bring together all these different disciplines, was that kind of a different approach?
No, he didn't bring together the disciplines. The disciplines were brought together by Yale in the Institute of Human Relations. He was one of the members of the group.
Got it.
But he was able to persuade them, the other members who were from different disciplines, to start this project.
Okay. And then you mentioned sort of, you know, the innovation of RAF itself. And I think that arguably could be carried through to today in terms of how it was put together and how it's structured. You know, an example of this would be the original process of the paragraph level classification. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how that classification system has evolved since its origins?
Sure. So what was considered innovative for its time, and I would argue still innovative, was the way RAF set up a unique organized information retrieval system, and it had a number of principles. One of them was to facilitate research for all the materials in one place, just rather than providing a pointer, like a bibliographic pointer, to materials elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was deliberately set up to have systematic classification systems for both cultures in the materials and the subjects. And these were called the Outline of World Cultures and the Outline of Cultural Materials. But the most innovative thing about this organized information retrieval system about cultures of the world is that the decision was made to use human intelligence to subject classify materials at each and every paragraph in every document included. And finally, what was unique was the decision was made to physically put the same topics together. Now, in order to do this, what you have to imagine is, suppose you have a page from, an article or a book,
right,
and there are four paragraphs on it. The human analyst would, using a shorthand of numbers, put on that page all the subjects covered next to every paragraph. And then if there were 10 subjects, that page would be replicated 10 times. And all the pages about the same subject would then be put together within the culture, ordered by author. But basically, if you were interested in socialization of children, you could go to the subject category and all the paragraphs or the pages with information on that would be all together. And with metadata at the top telling you what was the time period, who was the author, what kind of person was the author, were they an ethnographer, a missionary, you could readily find information across all the cultures in a really short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And these principles, particularly now that it's online, the most important thing we have retained is the subject indexing by paragraph is still done by anthropologists. The main change is that we now do it in an electronic indexing system, but they're still placed in a paragraph where they belong. We don't physically, because it's online, we don't have to physically put all the same subjects together, but we can retrieve them all together.
Right.
And in the online version, the main thing that's different is that because all the material has actually been retyped from the paper, we can now also search for words combined with subjects if desired. Now, over time, we have changed the classification system somewhat. We did it to incorporate some archaeological constructs. We have added some new topics like gender issues and roles. We try, however, not to change it too much because it's very hard to, well, it's not possible for us to retrofit the millions of previous paragraphs that were indexed without that new category.
Right, okay. So HRAF started as paper files, moved onto microfiche, and ever since that point, you've been digitizing it as the eHRAF edition, currently about 850,000 pages. Can you talk a little bit more on your ongoing efforts for digitizing the microfiche?
Sure. So we're actually nearing the end of what we will digitize. This fall, we will have sent to our converter the last of the microfiche we're planning to convert. It will take us, however, a few years until it's all online. But the caveat I have to tell everybody about is that we are not going to convert all of our microfiche. There are a couple of different reasons why we will not do all of it. This is something librarians ask us very frequently, and I'll explain a little bit why not. The original microfiche had a lot of country files. These were done largely in the 1950s, and they're very outdated, and we've decided, the board has decided not to convert them because, frankly, we don't have the people power to keep them up to date. And we think that information about countries, everybody would expect them to be up to date.
Right.
So we have made a decision to keep all the anthropological cultures. They will be converted from microfiche to the online eHRAF. But even within that, we weren't able to convert all the documents. So the microfiche and the eHRAF online will be different in quite a number of respects. Some of the documents were not considered of high enough quality. Mostly this would be travel reports. Some of the documents we felt were largely repetitive. Other documents had too many character problems, such as having handwritten accents or very unusual characters that we couldn't render digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to prune documents from the microfiche in order to get our online collection pretty much out there to the public. So it's never going to be the same, as I can tell. But it will largely have all of the same cultures. And of course, in the online version, we have made attempts to update what we had in microfiche. Does that answer your question?
It does, yes. Thank you.
Okay.
And Peter, let's jump over to you real quick. eHRAF Archaeology spun off in 1999, correct? Can you tell us a bit about how that came about?
Sure. 99 is a good date for saying eHRAF Archaeology spun off, but it really was a larger process than that. One of the key things that happened was that we needed to create a unit of analysis that would be universal. In the ethnographic literature, culture is a standard unit that's used, but archaeologists around the world have very different units of analysis from a feature to a site to a region. And so what we did was to create something that's artificial but not arbitrary, that's called an archaeological tradition. And in doing that, we took the entire history of humanity from 2 million years ago until roughly 1500 years ago, and tried to cut it up into comparable units, and those are the archaeological traditions. So that project began with creating the parallel to what ethnography has in the outline of world cultures, an outline that is called the outline of archaeological traditions. And that forms the backbone of eHRAF archaeology.
Okay.
From that, we created an encyclopedia. And there were about 220 different authors of that from around the world that wrote culture summaries or summaries, tradition summaries for each of those archaeological traditions. And then from there, we began building the files. The underlying reason for actually undertaking that large project was that if one is interested in studying cultural evolution, the time depth that's available through the archaeological record is important to be able to use. And the Ehraf ethnography has some files that have some time depth to them, but none of those are very long. They're on the order of a couple centuries. And we wanted to look at thousands of years, at the evolution of civilization, of agriculture, of complex societies. Okay. And so that's why the project was begun, to allow a resource for studying long-term processes of stability and change.
Okay.
I just want to add that, sure, I'm getting a very bad echo, however. And can you hear me still okay?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to add that the outline of archaeological traditions, which Peter compiled with a board of advisors, is actually now incorporated in our outline of world culture. So we have in Ehraf archaeology and Ehraf world cultures an integrated classification system.
Okay.
And I think we should also note, and Carol pointed this out earlier, but it's worth reiterating, that there were additions made to the outline of cultural materials to include archaeological materials and concepts that were not originally in it. So the two resources are merging more and more as time goes on.
Okay. I think one disconnect librarians and maybe some other customers might sometimes have is Ehraf is not really a quote unquote current events resource, as they might assume. Peter, I'm wondering if you could sort of talk about that a little bit more.
Of course. We hear this from librarians often, and it's something that's understandable. Ehraf archaeology and ethnography contain high-quality resources about the ethnographic and archaeological records. It's pretty obvious that the archaeological record is not going to have much current events material in it.
Right.
So that's maybe more understandable. The ethnographic record, though, is in many ways similar. Ethnography, as it's presented in Ehraf ethnography, is about traditional, if we want to call them that, or largely small-scale societies, many of which no longer exist. There are very few hunting and gathering peoples around the world anymore. There's very few pastoralists. Most of those small-scale societies have been integrated into states. And so it's very hard to add material to that. Right. Having said that, there is newer ethnographic material that is being added, but the purpose of Ehraf ethnography is to provide essentially a vast resource on the cultures of the world, and those cultures are being globalized today. And so new material is much more difficult to identify and bring in as the more classic material that describes those people before globalization was so extensive.
You just heard from Dr. Carol Ember and Dr. Peter Peregrin. This concludes the first of our four-part series on the origin of the Human Relations Area Files as an independent cross-cultural research agency based at Yale and the publisher of Ehraf World Cultures and Archaeology Databases. This episode was brought to you by Ehraf. Be sure to join us for the next episode, where we'll talk more about the content in Ehraf and its interdisciplinary potential.
one of the most interesting things that I've come across, which comes from a very different field, we found in the British Journal of Cancer, which actually used resources in ERAF to try to get a handle on how a virus that's associated with AIDS may be transmitted.
Find all of the episodes of The Authority File on your favorite podcast app or on our website, choice360.org. Just click on the librarianship dropdown. On choice360.org, you'll also find information on Choice's entire product platform, including Choice Reviews, CC Advisor, Choice Webinars, resources for college libraries, our white papers, and a whole lot more. A great way to keep up with The Authority File is to join the Choice Authority File Facebook group, which you can access via the Choice Reviews Facebook page. As a member of the group, you can give us feedback, suggest podcast participants, chat with other listeners, and submit new topic ideas. That's all for this week. Thanks for joining us.